Roto-Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Bringing you up-to-the-minute industry news, interviews from the biggest names in the industry, and game analysis to save you time and help you build your bankroll. Here's your host, the man with the best beard in Daily Fantasy, Crazy Gaby.
Howdy! Welcome. What is going on? Crazy Gaby here. Taking over a few of the podcasting duties from one Mr. Daniel T. Bach, and I mix it up a little bit. Got a little something special for you. I'm hanging out here with my buddy, Justin. You might know him as Big Italy 42, and we are going to rock your world with some daily fantasy sports analysis, or at least we're going to try to. We should probably put the disclaimer in there. There's no guarantee that we will, in fact, rock your world. It really depends on the size of your world, your rocking abilities. There's a lot of factors that go into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And today, this Thursday, is definitely rocking my world because I already love Thursdays in NFL season. Now we get a decent slate of NBA games. So this is my favorite day of this entire week. So my world is rocked. I don't know about everyone else's.
Well, I'll tell you who rocked my world. Adam Silver, because I'm so used to Thursday being a barren wasteland of fantasy basketball value. And if you take a look at the future schedule, because I saw that there were four games today, and Justin, I'm not going to lie, I got a little excited. You know, a little, I don't know if my first podcast I should go into this, but I suffer from a condition only when it comes to basketball. And this is real. You can look it up on Wikipedia. Persistent genital arousal disorder. And only when it pertains to fantasy basketball does it rear its head. But it's a real issue. Many people suffer from this every single year. And I just wanted to bring some awareness to that. And let it be known that Adam Silver has triggered me, because there are multiple Thursday night slates with four or five games this season. That means more opportunities for us to play daily fantasy basketball, more opportunities for us to make some cash.
Yeah, absolutely. Usually Thursday morning comes up in NBA season, and it's kind of like the sun never rises.
NFL stops. Yeah, especially when NFL is over, because you know there's just nothing. Nothing for you to do.
You might as well just sleep and wait for Friday.
Just don't get out of bed. There's no point. Literally 0 points. This podcast, of course, brought to you by FanDuel, the great people over there. We appreciate so much their support and them sticking with us. And, of course, we'd like to tell you about a few of the offerings they have going on right now. And it starts with the FFFC Super Qualifier. It's a $2 million tournament. This year's edition will be awarding 20 seats to the FFFC and $600,000 in cash prizes to the top 1,065 entries. This $200 entry tournament will max out at 11,487 entries, and satellites are currently posted in the lobby. They will be running from now until the Super Q. That means you got a chance to win some of those bad boys with the NFL and the NBA analysis, Justin, you and I are going to dish out here. I also want to remind people, if they haven't been to the Roto Grinders forum and checked out the sticky thread at the top of the forum from Dillinger4, a FanDuel rep, somebody that we love here at Roto Grinders, used to actually be with us. He told us about an awesome promotion for the College Football Hail Mary tournament. You see, on November 22nd, FanDuel will be running a special $200,000 edition of this tournament. That is a massive amount of money in a college football prize pool, and it's only a $25 buy-in. This is obtainable for anybody. Anybody can play in this tournament, and it's $20,000 for first place. There's going to be 9,195 entries, and the top 1,640 players will be paid. Satellites are currently posted in the lobby for this tournament as well. And, wait, don't fast forward. This Saturday, 10 free entries to the tournament, getting awarded to Roto Grinders members. The 22nd is when this tournament is in November. This Saturday is the free roll. Remember those two dates. The link to join is in the Roto Grinders forum under the sticky thread posted by Dillinger4. It's titled 200K CFB Super Hail Mary on 1122 RGS Free Roll Inside. So make sure you check that out as soon as you're done listening to the podcast. And hell, I won't even be mad at you if you press pause right now and just head over and check it out, because it's so damn impressive. I would want to digest that and take it all in right away as well. So, Justin, I'm guessing you probably bounced out while I was talking about it to go check it out, right?
Yeah, I actually just had to unmute you. I was over there checking into it myself.
I don't blame you, my man. This is an amazing opportunity for college football. So kudos to everybody at FanDuel for putting this together. We really appreciate you taking care of the Roto Grinders community, and we are very excited about the opportunity to play in this free roll this weekend. Also got a sick interview with Josh Adler from Living the Fantasy, the new fantasy sports documentary that's going to be coming out soon. And you'll definitely want to stick around after the fantasy sports analysis for that. It's going to be amazing. All right, it is time for us to roll up our sleeves and get down and possibly dirty. It really depends on which way things go. It could go either way when Justin and I are hanging out. But we're going to talk about tonight's very abbreviated but still impressive fantasy basketball slate. Of course, we have five games on tap tonight, which again, as I mentioned earlier, very impressive for a Thursday night slate. Washington at Orlando. Of course, you've got Washington on the back-to-back. You've got Orlando coming off an embarrassing loss at the hands of the New Orleans Anthony Davises. And this one is -1, actually, for Washington. So Vegas, not so confident that Washington on the back-to-back going to be able to pull a Pelican-esque victory over the Orlando Magic. And it is a 191.5 over under. So as far as fantasy is concerned, you don't want to get too caught up selecting players from this one, because it looks like this is going to be on the lower scoring side of the games you want to target this evening.
Yeah, absolutely. But based on how we saw that Orlando front court look in that first game,
yeah,
I'm definitely going to have plenty of shares of Marcin Gortat, some big men from Washington, because until I see differently, it looks like an easily exploitable matchup for anyone coming in.
Yeah, it looks extremely exploitable, and I'm just not sold that Drew Gooden is the answer. For those mop up minutes in the Washington front court. I know he had the impressive outing last night. He even hit a 3-pointer. So, by the way, if anybody was ever wondering what the hell is going on, don't ask me, because I don't know. I have no idea. Drew Gooden's hitting 3-pointers, and all of a sudden the world doesn't make sense anymore. But I'm with you. I think there's definitely some value to be exploited against the Orlando front court here. I am going to continue to say fade Elfrid Payton, simply because this is a guy who derived most of his value in transition in college. I think he has the physical tools, the raw ability to become a strong NBA player. I just don't think it's there yet. He's going to have to be refined. There's a reason he wasn't in the top 5 or 6 picks. And I do think that we are going to see him eventually turn into a very serviceable point guard. If I had to guess, I would say his career upside is maybe a little higher than an Avery Bradley. That's kind of where I would put it at. I think he has the opportunity to be a much better ball handler, probably an equal defender, and I just don't know if the scoring is ever going to be something that he's proficient in. So a lot of times we get shiny new toy syndrome. We see a guy like Elfrid Payton, we go, oh my, and we want to go all in on him. I'm telling you, that's not the way. If you rolled with Jabari Parker last night and you didn't listen to Draft Cheat and I on Grinders Live, you were disappointed with that. Just take a step back and go with what you know. And going with what you know means roles that were clearly defined last season that are still clearly defined this season. That's the way you want to take it in your cash games, at least. Of course, tournaments, all bets are off. Build your lineups how you like. But remember one thing about tournaments, my friends. It pays less to be uber contrarian in fantasy basketball than it does in any other sport. And just as a quick reminder, because I think it's good to have this refresher as we head into daily fantasy basketball season, coming off of, you know, daily fantasy baseball and in the middle of daily fantasy football, hockey, baseball, soccer, golf, well, not golf, sorry, not golf, but soccer, hockey, football, baseball, they're all defined by large singular events, goals, home runs, touchdowns, and they're slightly predictable, but on a game-by-game basis, it's really difficult to predict when those things are going to happen. You know they're going to happen, but it's going to be like, you know, in a span of 50 games, I know he's going to hit X home runs or score X goals or score X touchdowns, but you don't know when they're going to happen. Basketball is much more about repetition. You know, the guy batting eighth can hit a home run. The guy with 3 targets on an NFL field can score a touchdown. The guy getting 11 minutes off the bench just won't have enough opportunity to provide that same value.
Yeah, I agree. And like you said about Alfred Payton, I mean, he was defensive player of the year last year, so he's known more, like you said, as a defensive player. So he's not a guy that I'll be targeting much until I see differently either.
And I'll tell you one thing I will be looking at, though. It looks like Tobias Harris is a man on a mission. After a disappointing 2013-2014 campaign, which saw him enter the season with high hopes, dealt with that ankle injury the whole year, never quite looked right. I think Tobias Harris is a phenomenal mid-range value this evening, especially with no Trevor Ariza in town to guard him anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he had himself a great game first time out, 25-8. So I'm a big fan of Tobias, and his price isn't very expensive either. I mean, $6,500, especially on a night like tonight, you can fit him in there easily.
And the last player I want to mention in this one, just because it is kind of interesting, Paul Pierce with an extremely solid outing last night. Looked like the Paul Pierce of old, filling up the box score. Not so sure I trust it on the back-to-back. If I'm going to trust him on a back-to-back, though, it's going to be early in the season. So I do think there could be some value in tournaments for Paul Pierce. Although I would maybe listen to the buzz and the chatter around Washington. It's possible that, you know, maybe his minutes get limited a little tonight after playing, you know, last night and performing so well.
Yeah, that's going to be the concern with Paul Pierce all season long is, you know, over the course of time, they're going to hold back his minutes a little bit. So especially on a back-to-back, I'm with you there. I'm going to be cautious.
New York at Cleveland. This is the marquee matchup everybody wants to watch. And unfortunately, my friends, you are all going to be extremely disappointed. A, because the New York Knicks suck. And B, I just got done singing the NBA's praises. Adam Silver, what the hell were you thinking, dude? Like, you have executive power. I know for a fact that the scheduling department, it's not some rogue entity that gets to do whatever it pleases. You should have saw this schedule, and you should have decided to change this. I'm just going to throw that out there right now, because LeBron's debut, save for Thursday, they obviously wanted it to be marquee, they wanted it to be on national television, they wanted to make a big hoopla about it. Why the hell are you bringing the New York Knicks in on the second night of a back-to-back? Come on, like, really? Come on. Why couldn't this have been the Chicago Bulls on the second night of a back-to-back? Or hell, just save the Bulls for Thursday. I just
anyone but the Knicks.
Yeah, I don't get it. This is going to be a rout, as far as I'm concerned. New York looked bad. I mean, really bad yesterday. And I don't think it's going to get much better anytime soon. That triangle offense obviously has potential, but it's going to take at least half the season in my non-professional estimation for that team to pick it up. With a 199.5 over-under, you're certainly comfortable taking Cleveland players because this one is minus 12. The only thing I will throw out there, outside of tournaments, I would not be stacking Cleveland options because, again, we know that the scoring is going to come from the big three. You don't want to be stuck with three or maybe even two of the big three in your lineups tonight because if this one is over by the middle of the third quarter, you could be looking at an extreme loss in point production.
Yeah, especially at those high prices. I'm going to be waiting for a better matchup to be playing myself a lot of Cleveland Cavaliers because for those reasons especially, you see a fourth quarter. I mean, we've seen plenty of games already in 2 days like that where big names weren't playing fourth quarter. So I'm with you there. I don't think I'll be playing much outside of maybe one or two in a tournament because I don't anticipate they'll need to play in the fourth.
Keep an eye on whether or not Amari Stoudemire gets the start again tonight. Could be interesting if he does. The Cavs, of course, with Kevin Love and, Anderson Varejão and Tristan Thompson, two of those three pieces do not make for solid interior defense. So Amari Stoudemire could have a decent game. You got to kind of reach for value on a night like this. And also take a look at Shane Larkin if Jose Calderon is out again. I have a feeling Calderon might be back. I don't know. Maybe he was supposed to actually start yesterday. So it came as kind of a surprise that Shane Larkin ended up getting the start. Of course, you didn't want to take any New York Knicks players against the vaunted Chicago Bulls defense. But tonight could be a decent night to take Shane Larkin if he ends up getting the start again, just because Kyrie Irving's defense leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, and especially because you anticipate Shane Larkin will get run even if it's a blowout. Yeah. So 26 minutes in the first game. And he's a bare minimum price pretty much everywhere. So I'm a big fan of his. I'm kind of hoping he gets a start to get myself some salary relief there.
Yeah, he's an excellent source of that. Moving on to Detroit at Minnesota, 204-point over-under, minus 1.5 for the Timberwolves. This may be one of the few times this season we actually see the Timberwolves favored in a game because, by God, they looked awful. Outside of Thad Young, actually, wasn't a whole lot that looked great. I guess that's not fair to say. Ricky Rubio looked like Ricky Rubio, so we should probably point that out. But this team just does not look like it is prepared for to start an NBA season, which we kind of knew. They dealt away their best player. This is a team clearly playing for the future. I think they have a solid young core. The only issue I had with yesterday was they didn't actually let their young core get a lot of minutes. I don't think I don't think either of their young dudes logged over 19 minutes. Am I mistaken on that?
No, I'm seeing. I know Wiggins had 19.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah.
I know they held it down a little bit. You would think in a blowout they would want these guys to get some run, but that was not the case.
Yeah, you would think. I don't know. Maybe they were scared by the Julius Randle thing, afraid that playing him in garbage time something bad would happen.
Yeah,
who knows?
That's just that's insolence. Silly. You can't worry about stuff like that.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. This game, obviously, and I'm sorry, I misspoke there for a second. It was not a blowout. It was closer than it should have been in this game, but that was mainly due to Thaddeus Young, and nobody else on that court was really, you know, doing anything of worth. You look at Corey Brewer. He had a very characteristically Corey Brewer line. You look at, Nikola Pekovic, couldn't get anything going against Marc Gasol. In fact, the best production outside of Rubio and Thaddeus Young came from Shabazz Muhammad and Mo Williams off the bench, which are not two names that I think you're going to see lighting up the box scores, on a night-to-night basis. So I just think they should have let Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine get not Zach LaVine, but yeah, Zach LaVine. He didn't even get off the bench, did he?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Flip Saunders is going to try to win too much this season, and I think it's going to end up biting him in the ass.
Yeah, I do think your pick there of Thad Young, I mean, it seems like a real similar situation to him where he's surrounded by a little bit of talent, but mostly young players that don't know what they're doing. And it seems like until those guys get going, like you mentioned, get more minutes, I think he's going to still be the focal point here. And I think he's going to be a nice play most nights.
Yeah, one thing that is interesting, yesterday this game had one of the lowest over-unders of the day with, I think, 188.5 was what it finally settled at, or at least that's what I finally saw. And I was a little skeptical of that. I talked with Draft Cheat about it on Grinders Live. I said, you know, the Timberwolves, man, they play at such a furious pace that I think the Grizzlies have a little more scoring upside tonight than that. And that ended up being the case. So just keep an eye on that. And it looks like the Timberwolves are once again going to be a team that you can take an opponent who doesn't normally average a whole lot of points, and you get them a significant boost in value because there's going to be more possessions for them to take advantage of.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys like Josh Smith, again tonight, smooth. Had himself a throwback performance there, so hopefully he can continue that moving forward.
Not even a throwback performance. He does that from time to time. I'm just so worried about the Stan Van Gundy and Josh Smith effect rearing its ugly head. These two seem like they're destined for an in-season fight at some point, especially because Josh Smith shot 3 3-pointers again last night, which is just it's walking on dangerous territory as far as I'm concerned. I know SVG cannot be happy about that. So we'll have to keep our eyes open for that. But as far as fantasy value is concerned, tied for the highest over-under of the night at 204.5. So you'll definitely want to be targeting Detroit Pistons this evening. And for Minnesota, I think it's just going to be Thad Young and Ricky Rubio. And I just don't know that I can really put my finger on anybody else. Maybe Mo Williams as a value play tonight, but he shot 6 of 9 last night. That has not been his MO throughout his career. This is a guy who misses a lot more shots than he makes.
No, not at all. And Gorgie Jang did pretty well off the bench, but you don't anticipate him getting many minutes. But in 19 minutes, 6 points, 8 boards, 3 blocks. So obviously he's ultimate tournament play because you don't anticipate any more minutes than that.
Yeah, and he was good like that last year. It's just he's basically a Nikola Pekovic foot injury away from being relevant, which isn't too far out of the question considering the big man has had foot concerns over the course of his career. So Gorgie Jang, Gorgeous Dong, as we all know him. Definitely somebody you want to keep your eyes on moving forward. We are going to move forward as well to the Utah-Dallas Mavericks game. This one considered by Vegas to be another blowout. It's kind of interesting. We have two games at -1 and -1.5 respectively. And then we have the other three games all greater than -10. So might be kind of a night defined by blowouts. Kind of whichever one of these games predicted to be a blowout ends up being close might be the game that places a lot of people at the top of GPP. So just keep that in mind when you're building that maybe you want some, you know, to mix it up, maybe some mini stack from Utah, who's -10.5 underdogs to the Dallas Mavericks here in a game with a 192-point over-under. Maybe a Utah Jazz stack, because if Gordon Hayward, you know, Alec Burks, Derek Favors, if they keep this game close and they get to play the fourth quarter, all three of those guys playing the fourth quarter will give you a huge leg up on, you know, say, if those two other games, the New York Knicks and the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Oklahoma City Thunder and the LA Clippers end up being blowouts and everybody of relevance sits in the fourth quarter. You could get a huge leg up in your GPPs just by having three options from one of the few games that actually did stay close.
Yeah, and it does seem like it's going to be one of those nights. So you got to tread carefully there and make sure you get your guys that are actually going to get minutes late.
Yep. Just a little piece of, a little tidbit of fantasy advice there for roster construction. And as far as the Jazz are concerned, last night I basically saw exactly what I expected. I saw Trey Burke struggle to shoot the ball against Patrick Beverley's smothering defense. I saw Alec Burks as the most prolific scoring option on the team, which I assumed he would be. I saw Gordon Hayward not have as much offensive burden on himself as he did last season. Ty Corbin's system just was not working for Gordon Hayward. It looks like he is going to be much better served in the new offensive scheme they run, and he can be more of a point forward now, which is what the role he excels in is as a point forward. And even though he had a bad shooting night, he filled up the peripheral statistics. Derek Favors looks like he is all systems go on target for the breakout season all of us have been predicting. And I think as a whole, this could actually be a very sneaky source of fantasy value throughout the season, because outside of their starting five, they don't have a lot of depth. I mean, no. Trey Burke, Alec Burks, Gordon Hayward, Derek Favors, and to a lesser extent, Enes Kanter and Rudy Gobert, you know, depending on who ends up being the favored option in the front court there. I do think at some point this season, Gobert could overtake Enes Kanter, but I do think that there's some sneaky value to be gleaned there just because there's really nobody else on the roster that can offer production. They got rid of Marvin Williams, who was a productive guy last year. I think that this would be a good opportunity in GPPs to stack Burks, Hayward, Favors in a matchup where you take the rest of your players from Detroit, Minnesota, and Washington, Orlando, and then just hope that the other two games that are predicted to be blowouts end up being blowouts. You could have some great GPP potential there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like you mentioned, Derek Favors only played 27 minutes, but put up over 38 fantasy points last night. So he's a guy that I'm going to be playing quite a bit tonight, because Dirk Nowitzki's still a decent defender, but definitely losing a step at his age. So I think Favors is going to be one of my favorite plays tonight.
Dirk Nowitzki. We like him, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, what about Chandler Parsons? Are we going back to the well? Are we going to give him another shot, or does he have to show it to us first?
I think on a night like tonight, you're probably not paying for most of the really high-priced guys like the LeBron Jameses and Kevin Loves of the world. So I think that he's a decent option tonight, because you can spend up there and it's not going to kill your team if he has another subpar game.
I think that's probably a fair analysis. I think Monte Ellis also a decent option as well in this one, but basically the same problem with the Cleveland Cavaliers. You're really worried about the blowout. You don't want to invest a lot of salary, you know, cap space into guys like Monte Ellis and Dirk Nowitzki, because you're just worried that this one's going to get out of hand too quickly.
Yeah, the guy I'm really looking at in this is Devin Harris. Looked, in my mind, a lot better than Jameer Nelson in the first game. And even if this does turn into a blowout, I mean, he had 29 minutes in a close game against San Antonio. So I expect Devin Harris is going to get some run regardless of what the score is. And 17 points, 5 assists, 2 steals in his first game, 4,500 tonight. He's a guy I'm going to be playing quite a bit.
Yeah, Devin Harris is basically going to assume that Vince Carter role from last year. Just basically, yeah. He's basically the 5-point fifth man, or the 5.5 man. Not quite a starter, but essentially going to log enough minutes to be relevant every single night. And again, on a night with a blowout, there's no chance they're going to let Jameer Nelson's achy old ass be out there on the court in the fourth quarter. It's going to be Devin Harris that soaks up those minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially on a short slate, you want the cheap guys that are going to get minutes, and I think he's that guy tonight.
All right, last game on the slate, Oklahoma City Thunder, Los Angeles Clippers, 204.5 over-under, minus 10.5 for the Clippers in this one. And the big question that has to be answered right away, do we go back to the Russell Westbrook well tonight?
Man, I've been going back and forth on it all morning.
It's tough.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Paul, obviously one of the better defenders at point guard position in the game, but no one in their right mind can think you can slow down Russell Westbrook. No. But I mean, obviously, huge concern that there could be a blowout, because we saw Westbrook pretty much single-handedly keep the game close last night, and then Portland finally started hitting shots. Batum and Lillard finally woke up, and then the game was over quickly. So I'm genuinely concerned that Westbrook doesn't play more than three quarters, because they're not going to take any chances with him this early in the season if the game's 15 to 20 points at the end of the third.
I think, and I know this is a cop-out, I know this is a bitch move, I think I'm going to split my cash games 50-50 on all sites with Westbrook. Just because that's the problem is, like, if you pay up for him and he doesn't have a great night and he doesn't play the fourth quarter, you lose to everybody who didn't pay up for him. But exactly. If he has an insane night, Like last night, you just lose to everybody who took him in your 50-50s and your head-to-heads. I realize it may not be the, you know, the best strategy for profit margin, but I think it's a viable strategy. This is just a weird situation. It's a weird situation with a strange you know, narrative for a player right now, with everybody else being out, being on the back-to-back, being against a, you know, a good team who's predicted to blow them out. It's just, it's strange. I wouldn't normally advocate this, but I do think there's some merit in it tonight because it is such a question mark. And the Russell Westbrook question, yesterday there were 12 games. You could get by with not playing Russell Westbrook, even though it was unadvisable. There are five games tonight. Like, Russell Westbrook will define this cash game slate.
Oh, absolutely. And I anticipate a lot of people will still be on him, but I'm with you. I'm a little bit hesitant, especially with him and with Chris Paul as well, because Chris Paul obviously has a good matchup against Westbrook, who's not exactly a great defender in his own right. So I'm hesitant to play either guy, but you've got to have some exposure because either one of those guys could go off for 50-plus tonight.
Now, I will say this. There was an excellent tweet from Harlebob Vulgaris, one of the best basketball followers, not even fantasy basketball, just one of the best basketball followers in the game. His timeline starts to heat up once the game starts. Of course, he basically watches every night of NBA basketball, or just about every single night. So just one of the better places to look for insight. He's, of course, a prolific sports bettor. I'm sure I don't need to introduce him to any of you. You probably know who he is. But he retweeted somebody last night, and I got a kick out of it. They said that Russell Westbrook plays like he is in the, you know, Super Mario Brothers game, and he eats a gold star before every game.
I love that. I mean, he looked like that. He was incredible last night. I mean, that play right before halftime, just ridiculous.
I would love to just watch a game. Like I would love to put last night's game, you know, on replay. And just play that music on a loop. Just have the Gold Star music playing in the background. I think that'd be phenomenal.
That'd be incredible. I mean, you could even watch last night's game in slow motion, and he's still just going to be incredibly fast. I mean, he was just that good last night.
Yeah, he was just phenomenal. All right, that wraps up the Daily Fantasy Basketball analysis for today. And, of course, with today being a short NBA slate, it works out perfect because there's NFL tonight. Now, Justin and I are not going to go as in-depth into the fantasy football analysis because, of course, it's only Thursday, so you'll probably be playing minimal amounts of contest at best, and you'll have lots more analysis coming up both on tomorrow's podcast with Dan and on Grinders Live over the course of the weekend, all the different football content at rotogrinders.com. But we are going to touch on it lightly just in case. If this is the only thing you get to listen to or hear about today, we want you to be prepared for this weekend. So I'm going to start it off here, Justin, with Norlands at Carolina. Carolina's run defense, and I should mention the way you and I are going to do this, we're just going to give one quick take, our thoughts on this, and then we're going to move along. So no back and forth. We're not going to get too deep into it because we don't want to take up too much time. But for me, New Orleans at Carolina, 49.5 point over-under, minus 2.5 for Carolina, which tells me one thing. Drew Brees away from his home stadium is a no-go. I will not be investing in Drew Brees' salary this weekend, and I will be investing in Mark Ingram. And Ingram I trust because Carolina's run defense has been awful so far this season.
Yeah, we can move to the next game because I'm with you on Ingram there.
Okay, good. San Diego at Miami, minus one for San Diego, but only a 44-point over-under. Vegas is predicting this one to be more of a bit of a defensive struggle. For me, stay away from the running backs in San Diego. It looks like Ryan Matthews is going to be back for this one. That means it's probably a 50-50 timeshare, would be my best guess, between Brandon Oliver and him. I don't know exactly how it's going to pan out. I only know that I want to stay away. In the game with a low total, I don't think I want anything to do with any offensive weapons on either side of the ball.
No, actually, my point that I was going to bring on this was avoiding Antonio Gates, because Football Outsiders has Miami as number one against tight end. So I don't know their best in my book, but I'm not playing Antonio Gates in a low over-under in that matchup.
You know what? Byron Scott doesn't care for your stats, young man.
Hey, I don't care for Byron Scott's mustache. It looks fake.
It's still not as bad as Mike Woodson's goatee. Good God.
Oh, but I mean, it's damn impressive, though. That goatee. I mean, obviously, I could never grow one like that. It's phenomenal.
Like he glued felt on his face. It doesn't look like a goatee, but all right. I digress. I digress. All of the digression. Let's go to Jacksonville at Cincinnati. Your Bungles. Yeah, that's right. I'm calling them the Bungles again because that's what they are. Oh, man. 45-point over-under, but they are minus 13.5 at home against Jacksonville. First of all, let it be known that Justin is a Cincinnati Bengals homer. So I'm gonna just go ahead and hand it over to you on this one. Do you think they should be a minus 13.5-point over-under? Are you taking the Jacksonville Jaguars plus 13.5 here?
If I had to bet it, I probably would bet Jacksonville.
I would, too.
Yeah, I know the Bengals' defense looked somewhat better last week. I'm still not buying it. AJ Green should be back, but now Giovanni Bernard is questionable. So I do think the Bengals will win, but I don't anticipate a 2-3 touchdown blowout.
Yep, I think so. I think that's pretty solid as well, and I'll probably be staying away from everybody but AJ Green in this one.
The only person I'm considering right now is if Giovanni Bernard doesn't play, which I would not be shocked if he doesn't, because the Bengals anticipate winning this game. And I wouldn't be surprised if they just let him rest and let Jeremy Hill be the feature back. If that's the case, I'm playing Jeremy Hill. If not, pretty much a pass for me outside of Green in tournaments.
Yeah, I would have Jeremy Hill in every cash game lineup if he drew the start.
Absolutely.
Tampa Bay at Cleveland, 44.5-point over-under. -6 for Cleveland here. Of course, Tampa Bay just abysmal. Cleveland actually looking lightweight respectable right now. 4-3 through the first 8 weeks of the season. And I think they could end up being 5-3. So the question then becomes, do we take any Cleveland options from this one? And as much as I would like to go back to the well, this is too convoluted of a situation as far as running backs are concerned. I will be avoiding all fantasy options in cash games, at least, in this one.
Only thing for me I'm looking at in this one is Andrew Hawkins. Tampa Bay has been pretty terrible. They're a team that I've been loving to target every week in the passing game. Obviously, the Browns with no clear-cut number one and a wide receiver right now. So Hawkins, the volume guy. Last week, 7 for 88 and a touchdown. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get close to that again this week.
Washington at Minnesota, 44.5-point over-under, -1.5 for Washington here. And my only point in this one, I know who won't be scoring the very few points that Minnesota actually does put up. Teddy Bridgewater. That for me means it has to be from someone, and Jerick McKinnon is a better candidate than anyone else. Don't let last week fool you. He still had a great game. He just didn't get in the end zone. I will be all over Jerick McKinnon this week.
Yeah, and he's still fairly priced around the industry, yep, too. It seemed like the beginning of that game, they just struggled to have any
two carries any in the fourth game. Quarter. Two carries in the fourth quarter. Minnesota's coaching staff are idiots.
Yeah, they'll learn sooner rather than later, hopefully.
Philadelphia at Houston, 50-point over-under. That's what I'm talking about. -2.5 for Philadelphia here. All the DeAndre Hopkins, all the Arian Foster, all the Jeremy Maclin, just lots of fantasy goodness. You're going to want to be targeting this game for your cash games, especially since there are an uncharacteristically low amount or high amount of low total games this weekend. So the 50-point over-under, definitely the one you're going to want to look at. All these offensive options in play.
Yeah, absolutely. Maclin, probably my favorite of all those. I'm going to be playing him on almost every lineup because Houston has really struggled against the pass this year.
New York Jets at the Kansas City Chiefs. From what I can tell, tied for the lowest total of the week at 41.5, and Kansas City is -7.5. Basically tells me one thing. In tournaments, Jamaal Charles. Outside of that, nothing from this game.
Yeah, the only thing I'm looking at here is if he's completely healthy, Travis Kelce, because the Jets have been absolutely horrible against tight ends
this
year.
He doesn't get any work. Andy Reid refuses to put him on the field. That's the issue.
I know.
If he could get at least like 60% of the team snaps, I'd be down for Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
So
the matchup is very enticing, but I hear your point on it, though. It's frustrating, to say the least.
I love Kelce, though. Huge Kelce barnacle. Arizona at Dallas, 48-point over-under. Dallas still -4, even with the questions about Tony Romo's health swirling around. That means that I think Brandon Weeden could end up being a very significant source of salary relief, especially in your tournaments this weekend. Arizona, of course, awful against the pass, especially against tight ends. I think Jason Witten, especially on DraftKings with his very depressed price tag, could end up being a significant value. And I probably will have all the Dez Bryant and all the DeMarco Murray in this one. Again, one of the higher scoring games of the week.
Yeah, I expect that they'll be able to have tons of success in the pass game, like you said, and good luck stopping Dez Bryant with that secondary.
Absolutely. St. Louis at San Francisco, 44-point over-under, -7.5 for the San Francisco 49ers. No surprise there. St. Louis has just looked god-awful. The season has spiraled out of control for them. I can't say I really like anyone from San Francisco, though, from a fantasy perspective, even though it looks like they're going to put up some points this week. So maybe Colin Kaepernick, but again, I'm just not convinced there's any way to pinpoint the value on this team.
Yeah, for me, it would be Kaepernick or probably a pass on the 49ers side just because of how he absolutely dominated them last time out. Obviously, you don't anticipate a ridiculous stat line like that where he threw for 343 yards. But if I'm playing anyone from this, it's Kaepernick in some tournaments.
Next up, we have Denver at New England. Now, this one, the highest total of the week, 54-point over-under. No surprise there. -4 for Denver coming into New England. That's got to put a chip on Tom Brady's shoulder, Belichick's shoulder, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. A slap in the face.
All the fantasy goodness in this one. Basically, if you can dream it up, you can play it in your lineup. I am down with all of the conventional options in this one.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Ronnie Hillman in this matchup, especially because
it
seems
to me.
Yeah, he's questionable. I'm assuming he's going to play, though.
Okay.
I mean, he was limited Wednesday. John Fox, last I saw, he said he just landed funny. Okay. So it seems like he should be good to go. Obviously, keep an eye on that one. But if he's good to go, New England has been pretty bad against the run this year. And you anticipate they're going to be focusing on stopping Peyton Manning and the aerial attack. So I think that Hillman will have plenty of big holes to run through if he's good to go.
Yep, I think so as well. I like that play a lot. Anybody else from this one that you could really call a must play? Because I think Tom Brady, if his price tag continues to be well below the rest of the starters, I would want to run with him.
Yeah, oh, huge fan of Tom Brady. And, I mean, if you're going to play Brady in a tournament, you got to play him with Gronkowski. So I'm playing Gronkowski quite a bit this week. I don't see any reason to fade him. Fade him at your own risk.
All right. Let's move it on over to the next matchup, Oakland at Seattle. And we can just go ahead and move on as quickly as we got there because outside of a Russell Westbrook entry in a tournament, I'm just not going to. I'm not going with anybody from this one.
Freudian slip, the Russell Westbrook.
Oh, Russell Wilsbrook.
That
we'll call
was, that a dig on Seattle?
Yeah, maybe.
The Supersonics.
Oh wow, taking it all the way back. Yeah, I think I'm going to stay away from this one completely though. Outside of tournaments, Russell Westbrook in tournaments, maybe a Doug Baldwin, but that's it.
Yeah, agreed.
Baltimore at Pittsburgh, another just low-scoring defensive struggle is what Vegas is predicting here. -1.5 for Baltimore going into Pittsburgh, 44-point over-under. Don't chase Ben Roethlisberger, please. Don't chase Martavis Bryant either.
No. If I'm playing somebody in tournaments from this, it'd be Antonio Brown, but that's about it for me. I was considering maybe a Baltimore running back because the Steelers have really struggled to wrap anybody up in that front seven, but it's just a mess back there. Even when Forsett played, Tyler Farrell stole 2 touchdowns last week. So it's hard to say. So it's a pass for me.
Indianapolis at New York Giants. Another high-scoring game. 49.5-point over-under. -3 for Indianapolis coming into New York. Fire them up. Andrew Luck. T.Y. Hilton. Ahmad Bradshaw revenge game. And for the New York Giants, you got, after seeing what happened last week with Ben Roethlisberger, you got to throw Eli Manning, Reuben Randle, Odell Beckham Jr., who you pray to God has passed, basically Larry Donnell as far as the secondary target on the team, because Donnell just has not looked good recently. And if he's the second target for Eli Manning, the second look every time out, there's a lot of fantasy value to be gleaned there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the ultimate revenge game. You got Hakeem Nicks in there with his revenge game as well. So
no, Hakeem Nicks is off.
Pass that.
Dante Moncrief needs to be in over Hakeem Nicks.
No, I wasn't saying play him, of course.
Yes,
no
you
way.
Were. I'm holding you to that. You said every lineup Hakeem Nicks.
Never. I actually played Dante Moncrief in most of my lineups last week, and I'm going to go back to that because
bro,
that
I'm giving you a digital fist bump right now.
Phenomenal.
That was awesome. Dante Moncrief, great call last week, by the way. I remember hearing you. You tweeted about it, right?
Yeah, I wrote it up in my article as well. Yeah. Moncrief was a sleeper to have last week. Way better than Hakeem Nicks.
Very nicely done. And that is all for the Daily Fantasy Football Analysis. And got a little treat for you here. Got something you guys are going to want to check out. So stick around for just a moment. We'll be back after a short break. All right, joining me now on the podcast, something very special for all of you. We have Josh Adler, director of Living the Fantasy, a new movie coming out detailing the characters and the different situation scenarios behind the scenes in fantasy sports. You can follow him at the_fantasy_doc on Twitter. Josh, how you doing here, my man?
I love that only in this world you would consider me very special. So that's fucking great, man. That's awesome. Thank you.
You are very special, dude, because anybody who is bringing this sort of attention to our industry is somebody that I will welcome with open arms. So you're going to get a big crazy gaby, hell yeah, right now. Thank you so much for joining us here.
Awesome. Thank you. The one thing I'll say is, I'm a filmmaker first, but I happen to be a filmmaker who loves playing fantasy sports. So I thought I was never trying to do anything to make a certain group happy, but I'm glad I'm making you happy.
You are indeed making me happy, and I think that's as good of a place to start as any. By the way, everybody listening, you can go to livingthefantasy.com, watch the trailer, head over to the Kickstarter page from there. More on the Kickstarter page in just a moment, but for now...
Hell yeah.
You said that you made me happy as a DFS player, but when I was talking to you before we started doing this, you said actually that it wasn't your intention at the beginning for this to be even, 50-50 split between year-long and daily fantasy. What changed when you started doing this documentary that really made you reexamine how you were going to portion out the content as far as yearly and daily were concerned?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the thing about this is I think a lot of people who are in a certain industry decide, hey, I want to make a documentary or a film about that industry, but they don't know how to make a film. So they just, start, hey, I know some guy in high school who studied film at blah, 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 and start talking. And then sometimes they actually make the film, but I've yet to see a good film set in the world of... honestly, either poker or fantasy sports or anything. The way I went about it is I'm a filmmaker. I went to film school with my producer. Actually, we both went to Columbia University where we got our master's in film. And when I met with her, I said, hey, I have this idea about fantasy football. She knows nothing about fantasy football. She's a brilliant producer. Her name is Ann Deep. And, she just said, oh, okay, fantasy football, great. I said, I want to follow five people as they try to become the world champion of fantasy football. I want it to be a story, beginning, middle, and end. I don't want it to be about fantasy football. I want it to be about them trying to win because it's a fucking crazy, awesome world. She said, great, is there a championship? I said, I don't know. I've researched, and there's like three, four, maybe five, so I want to talk to them. And then we'll put them in our movie, and that will maybe become the championship. And I also had the idea to go to a few different daily sites and say, hey, we'd like to watch people play daily, but I never thought daily would be a big part of it because I didn't think it would be a big story. I thought the story would be, the backbone of the story would be trying to win the yearly. That's what would be interesting, and that still is the backbone of my story. It's going to take us from the beginning to the end. But while doing this, all of a sudden, I just started researching and learning more and more about the daily, even though I had played, and at that time I was playing on DraftStreet.com. But as I'm shooting the documentary, things kept happening, and I remember the moment it happened where the story just changed. I was in Charlotte, North Carolina, shooting one of our contestants, Thad Easton, who's this amazing guy, and we're in his house, we're shooting him getting his five kids ready for school with his awesome wife, Kelly. And I kept getting texts from people like Michael Rathburn and Nando DeFino and all these people in the industry saying, holy shit, do you see what's happening? Look what's happening. And I realized DraftKings just bought DraftStreet.
Wow.
So I'm on my camera with Thad, and I tell him what happened. He goes, oh, my God, really? Because he won $100,000 on DraftStreet.
Right.
So he goes on the website of DraftStreet, and it's like, we are no longer DraftStreet. Please go to DraftKings. And then he goes on DraftKings and says, wait, there's a banner here that says there's now four $1 million prizes. And he's like, oh, man, I got to get on that. And I'm like, all right. So now my yearly thing of $150,000 grand prize is different. It's still the backbone of the story, but now it's about, holy shit, people can win $1 million a day.
Yeah.
And we're like, this is what the story is. And, you know, we've been working with DraftKings. They've been just amazing. We've been, you know, they're not like trying by any means to say, hey, shoot this to tell the world about DraftKings. But I'm like, hey, I'm going to shoot my players trying to win $1 million. And more importantly, we're going to be in the Bahamas, hopefully with some of our contestants if they make it, and we'll be there following them. That was a long ass answer.
That's,
I feel,
right.
Like, cut me the fuck off. That was stupid.
No, that's okay. That's why we have you here. We want to hear what you have to say. Nobody wants to know what I had to say. I talk too much anyways, so you're just fine.
I've seen your beard, so I would imagine that is correct.
I'm much better to look at than listen to.
That is scary if that's true.
So that's a pretty good segue into something else I wanted to ask you about. You've obviously been, I think yesterday actually, you were in Boston filming with DraftKings. You said
we
that
are.
You got a lot of good footage there. Everybody there was awesome.
Are
they the only site that you're really going to be focusing on as far as daily is concerned? And have they given you any sort of funding or anything like that to help you guys out? Or is this more of a broader picture of the entire industry that you want to capture?
That's a great question. They are the only site that we're going to be following because of this. Let me explain so you're aware. When I came up with this idea, as a documentary filmmaker, you're not going to do anything to screw with the product, with the integrity of what I'm doing. And this doesn't screw with it, because this is a story about people playing daily fantasy sports and trying to win. Now, I don't want the only people who enjoy this movie to be people who like fantasy football. I want my wife, who could give a shit about fantasy football, to watch this movie. And I swear to God, this is the truth. She was not behind this at all until she saw the trailer. And she said, oh my God, okay, I want to see this movie. And I'm like, yes, that's it. Because my wife, by the way, is awesome, and she would tell, like, she has no problem being like, oh, that looks, like, I'm proud of you, good for you, it looks great. That would bore the shit out of me, because she was like, wow, I want to see this. So anyway, we're telling the story about people playing daily fantasy. I didn't care which site we see them playing on, like, because that's not the story. The story's not about a war between two sites right now. I mean, we are going to talk about the fact where daily fantasy is going, and are there going to be other people coming into this world and stuff like that. But it's just about Corey Albertson. He just won $1 million last weekend, and we happened to, you know, my producer's awesome, and had a camera crew in Santiago, Chile. Yes, we actually got a camera crew to Santiago, Chile within like 12 hours to shoot him winning $1 million. And, you know, we thought he might win it. So we also had a camera crew with Tommy G here in New Jersey, because we thought he might win the King of the Beach. So it was just incredible footage in that way. So DraftKings has been really helpful in that way, like letting us know who's, what of our contestants are about to win, and I've been following it on there. And they've just been so supportive. Like, when I pitched this project to them, they got the idea. They were like, that's awesome. And they made it clear that, like I said at the very beginning, I'm not doing a promo video for you. I'm not here to make you look good. I'm just here to show my players playing. And quite frankly, when they see that, when people see that, they might watch the movie and say, ooh, I want to play, and they'll hopefully go on DraftKings. Now, of course, I pitched the other companies, and they didn't really see that. They were very friendly, but didn't really take us seriously, I guess. DraftKings was very respectful.
Huh.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that definitely answers the question. And what I take away from that is really that, again, the main focus of this is the site that you're actually, you know, the players are playing on is peripheral. The main issue is you want to capture the human essence of this entire ordeal, of people trying to grind away and win life-changing money, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we do have to give, in order for the layman to understand what's happening, we have to give some history and how it actually works. And for that, DraftKings was phenomenal. You know, we talked to their CEO, Jason, yesterday for a long time, and it was actually really hard to interview him because he's a massive movie buff. So him and I, like, for the first 20 minutes of our 30-minute interview, just, like, talked about the Coen brothers and our favorite movies. And, like, I want to be his best friend. I mean, neither of us really cared about talking about fantasy sports. You know, so that was, I just felt like we were instant friends. And, you know, we talked with Peter Jennings and Al Smizzle and a few other people there who are at the DraftKings office. And they just more, they're there to sort of paint a picture for the people who are going to view this movie of what is fantasy sports. So someone like my wife could understand what it's about, then easily follow the story of the people I'm following.
That's very cool. Very, very cool. So, yeah, speaking of the people, you know, you talked to Peter, you talked to Smizzle. They were at the DraftKings office. How did you actually decide and rest, you know, finally upon these subjects? You said there were going to be five, but from the website, livingthefantasy.com, I actually see that there are seven folks that you've chose to feature. How did you end up deciding to make these seven people the main focus of the documentary?
You are a smart man. So we do have seven. There are five of those seven are actually doing the yearly league for the FFWC, okay, which Scout.com now owns. So that's Jeff Manns, Tommy G, Thad Houston, Kimra, who I'll talk about, and Matt Carpenter, who's just the sweetest, nicest guy you'll ever meet. Then as my producer and I are playing this together, we read this article about Corey Albertson, and are like, dude, we want this guy in our film. This guy looks awesome. And people, I'm like, I bet he won't do it. He looks kind of cocky. He looks kind of egotistical. So we put out, I put out a call to Michael Rathburn, who's been helping us out, I'm sure you guys know, and said, you know him? He's like, yeah, you know, here's his info. Let me email. And Corey, like, to his credit, I was totally wrong. Like, nicest guy in the world. Whip smart. Like, I don't think I'm an idiot, but he makes me feel like an idiot. He's so smart. And he said, yeah, I'd love to do it. He said, I don't really have, like, if I had to be in the yearly contest, I don't think do it, not because I'm being a jerk, but because I'm an MBA student in Notre Dame, and my, you know, first week of classes is when the draft's going on in Vegas, and I wouldn't be able to do it. And my producer and I just thought to ourselves, like, that's cool, we'll do a B story. And that's when Daily started to sort of take over the yearly. And then Pilar Lastra, Tommy G introduced me to, when Tommy G was already sort of signed on to be one of the people we're following.
That does not surprise me, by the way, that he introduced you to her.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't want to disparage Pilar. Pilar is obviously a beautiful, beautiful woman, but in this natural way where I wouldn't necessarily, if you said, hey, this girl's a Playboy model, I'd be like, oh, she probably looks fake, blah, blah, blah. She is just gorgeous, and I think what makes her so gorgeous is how brilliantly intelligent she is.
Yeah.
Intelligently brilliant, whatever you want to say, and just such a good person. Like, the second I talked to her, I was like, wow. I like you. I just, like, if I ever told my wife, hey, I want you to meet a Playboy model, she'd be like, what? I'm like, no, but I want you to meet this one because you will be her best friend. But Pilar, again, doesn't really play the high stakes. She just is sort of an ambassador. So that's her role in this film. So there's the five people I talked about who are actually playing yearly. Three of those are big DFS people. One of them, Matt Carpenter, who you'll learn his story in our film, he's sort of making his way into DFS. And then there's Kimra, who's, again, I keep speaking in total hyperbole about all of these people, but it's true. Kimra, who's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. She actually, we played one-on-one at Horse the other day when we were shooting at her old high school, and she beat me. I've never lost in my life. She beat me horse to nothing. She skunked me. And, like, I'm like, you skunked me. You were, like, I just got my ass kicked. She's like, oh, you didn't have a chance to warm up. Like, she won't even admit that she beat me. but Kimra's like, she's awesome, but she hasn't really done daily. So we're waiting for any week now. Every week she texts me or emails me. She said, this week might be the week. because I want to see, she's the number 8 ranked fantasy, year-long fantasy player in the world, and she hasn't really done daily. I want to see her do daily and see her use her genius to start Skunk and All You Boys.
Yeah, yeah. I think anybody who's ranked that highly in season long has a much better than average chance of becoming a prolific DFS player. And to kind of speak to your point about Pilar Lastra as well, love what you did in the trailer, whereas you were sort of putting the kind of the words on the screen to describe who it was you were interviewing. You put beauty for her, and then you scratched it off and put brains instead. I thought that was really cool and really kind of hammers home the point you were making.
Well, she was. I think a lot of people are going to say, like, of course you're going to say, oh, you picked her because she's this. You pick Kimura because she's a woman. You pick Thad because he's African-American. I'm like, no. Don't ever do that to me. I pick these people because they are really freaking good, and it's great that it's not 5 fat white guys like myself.
I'm raising my hand right now, by the way. You can't see it, but I'm raising
my hand. All right, there we go. Another fat white guy with facial hair and, athlete's feet. So that, I don't know where the athlete's feet came from.
That's fine. I'd say you have a pretty good chance of being spot on with that, so.
Yeah, exactly right. I think it's because I have it, I guess. But no, Kimura is just, she will whip anybody's ass. And Pilar knows her stuff so well. If I talk to her and she's like, oh, I like fantasy sports, hee hee, I like this guy because he's cute, so I'm going to put him on my fantasy team, I'd be like, all right, this is stupid and this is going to make her look bad. I'm not going to put it. But no, Pilar is just awesome. And we shot her and Jeff Manza doing the live radio show on SiriusXM while we were in Vegas, and you see the first shots you see in our trailer are of them, and they have the most amazing chemistry together. Like, I think they should have a huge show in the world, because it's just the two of them together are just fun and awesome and funny, and she's like the big sister who is taming Jeff Manz, making sure he doesn't say anything naughty.
Right.
You just and then you get their really brilliant fantasy insight, which I love.
Yeah, they both are extremely brilliant. Both of them catch them on SiriusXM Fantasy, which of course RotoGrinders also meddles in a little bit. And I believe Dan recently made an announcement about the future of RotoGrinders with SiriusXM. So you can check out the previous podcast to find out a little more information about that. Or I guess you could just tweet at him on Twitter and. He'd be more than happy to answer those questions. So,
that's awesome.
I want to shift over to the Kickstarter campaign, because we've only alluded to it so far, but this is a huge part of what you're doing. From what I read last night, and a really cool campaign, by the way,
Thank you.
Guys have basically, up until this point, you haven't had to dip into to crowdfunding, correct?
Right, yeah, we've been fortunate enough to have investors. I'll say this, like, really quickly again. I pray that people are still listening and haven't gotten bored to death by me. But if they are, thank you for being here. And know that getting a film made is a very hard prospect to do. You know, I spent 7 years in L.A. after I graduated Columbia, and I had this project and this project never quite get off the ground. I came up with this idea, and within 3 weeks I had funding for it because I pitched it to some very smart businessmen who saw the project, but we never wanted to get the full amount from them because it is hard to make, great money for a documentary, no matter how good it is. So we got a certain amount of funding from them, but the rest was always needed to get through Kickstarter.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me at all that when you pitched it to some smart people, they were willing to pony up some cash. You know, one of the 10 fastest growing industries in the United States of America, you really can't get much of you can't get much better of a deal than that if you're going to pump some money into something. So very interesting documentary for sure. And I see that you now need to raise $138,000 to continue filming and complete the post-production. And by the way, you can get to the Kickstarter campaign through livingthefantasy.com. So again, head over to that website, check it out, then link over to the
Do it now, you lazy bum.
Right now, or else.
Stop trying to set your freaking NBA lineup for tonight, or just go give us a pledge and be part of this amazing film.
Yeah, and I thought what was really cool, too, is that if anybody was wondering, like, oh, these guys are just trying to pocket some cash, blah, 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 you've actually got a great financial breakdown. I'm a big sucker for pie charts. I'm going to say that right away. A well-done pie chart is the key to my heart, ladies, if you're listening. And you've got it all laid out right here, what the costs are, what the expenses are. And I was talking to you earlier, and I think this is the way DFS players need to look at this. You know, we think of ourselves as little investment managers, and, you know, we like to relate playing daily fantasy sports to the stock market. I know Tommy G talks about that in the trailer for the documentary. And that's what everybody needs to look at this as, is DFS community, it is up to us to make sure this gets out there and affects the mainstream and that people get excited about playing fantasy sports in general if they've never played, or they get excited about playing daily fantasy sports if they've only played season long. And so my challenge to all of the listeners right now is you've got this $10 level, all right? The lowest level that there is on the, you know, for a pledge, the $10 level, it's the bench player level. All of you listening, or just about all of you, play $10 head-to-heads on a regular basis. And your ROI on that, you know, potentially you get $9 out of that. You're not going to see any ROI right away on this. So you're not going to get $9 deposited in your account. But think of this as a $10 head-to-head where the ROI is tremendous as long as this goal for this campaign is met and this gets published. And think of all the new players that come to the sites. You're the veterans. You get to feast upon that for a little while where everybody else is learning the ropes, getting their beats, just like all of us had to do. And so that is my challenge to everybody listening. Think of this like a $10 head-to-head. And if everybody listening, if everybody at RotoGrinders, who's part of the community, just went and put at least the $10 level down, we could get you a lot closer to where you need to be.
I appreciate that, man. And I'll go a step further, you lazy bastards. You go there and you put in... Wait, I'm looking through it. You want to be an executive producer of this film? $10,000. Think about that. What is $10,000 to you, right?
Yeah.
There's dead silence.
I was going to say, you've got the
5,000, 10,000. No, yeah. But really, like, hey, look, $10 would be phenomenal. That would be great. There's definitely, you know, other fun prizes. You were mentioning you like the $50 level. Why is that, Gaby?
I like the $50 level, and I think this is well within my bankroll and everybody else's bankroll. I like it because you get a whoopee cushion with the Living the Fantasy logo on it. I don't know what could be better than third-grade hijinks combined with daily fantasy sports. So I can just imagine at the Rotor Grinders offices, you know, you got Cam, you got Cal, you got everybody that works behind the scenes, just taking those bad boys and, you know, tossing them on the chair, maybe covering it up with a, you know, a coat or something like that, and then just, you know, the laughter ensues. And you could have that, yeah, too, for your office, for the $50 level. See, I love it.
Because when you hear the sound of flatulence, I want you to think of my film. There we go.
I was going to say, if we were to get a hypnotist to come in, and we could get them to mentally connect that, you know, that'd be pretty
awesome. That'd be awesome. When you hear a fart, please pledge a little money.
Every
single
time.
But remember, it's not just the whoopee cushion. You also get a special thanks in our film. You also get a digital copy of the film.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get everything there.
Yeah. And some perks for the pledge levels are fun. Some of them are more, you know, straightforward, like the $75 level gets you a DVD or Blu-ray of Living the Fantasy upon release. Some of them are more priceless gifts, like you get the ability to be coached by a DFS expert. I believe it's Michael Rathburn who gives you a 30-minute session via phone or Skype.
Right. And then, you know, then there's also, like, look, yeah, the way more expensive ones. There are executive producer credits, which is great. Like, honestly, you're going to see the film and your name on our film and on IMDb, an Internet Movie Database. You're going to be listed as an executive producer or for $5,000, an associate producer. $5,000, a co-producer. $2,500, an associate producer. But, you know, it's great. You then go to a bar and say, girl says, what do you do for a living? Instead of saying, I dabble in DFS, you say, you know, I'm a producer of a film, a major feature film, and you are going to go to bed with that girl that night. I want you to know that that is not guaranteed.
I was going to say, Tommy G approves of that that angle you just took, though.
Tommy G is not listening to this right now as I'm speaking, but I'm pretty sure his ears just perked up somehow and he doesn't know why.
He has a spider sense, but I think we all know it has nothing to do with danger being in the area.
Exactly. So. Yeah, but thank you. Yeah, I mean, guys, if you go on Kickstarter, it would mean the world to us because we do need the money to finish the film. We are just poor filmmakers.
LivingTheFantasy.com, you can click the link to the Kickstarter campaign from there. All right.
Awesome.
That's some of the serious stuff. And actually, I have one more serious question, so I should probably get to that first before I go into the nonsense. I like to degrade all my interviews to nonsense by the end, so I've got some rapid-fire nutty questions for you. But the last thing I want to know is what do you want or what is your goal? Because as a filmmaker, you obviously have a vision. Everybody artistic has a vision, like an end goal, what they'd like people to experience emotionally once they've seen a piece of artwork. So what would you like, you know, the common layman who likes football or dabbles casually in fantasy football but has never really dove into this, what are you hoping they take away from this?
It's a great question, and my honest-to-God only goal is I believe this sincerely as a filmmaker, that when I go see a film, I want to be entertained. And entertained doesn't mean I want to laugh. It doesn't mean I want to have silliness in my life. Sometimes entertainment is Schindler's List, and it's beautiful, and a beautiful story that's going to make you cry and make you think. Sometimes entertainment is Happy Gilmore, and it's just going to be funny, and it's going to be awesome, and you're going to, you know, think about the ridiculous lines for weeks on end. I want you to be entertained. I don't want this movie to just be interesting if you happen to be a fantasy person. You're the last people I want to find this interesting. You're the first people I want to pledge.
And they should.
Well, let me explain that. And again, I don't want that to sound bad. I want to explain it by saying you're already my audience. I'm pretty sure you're going to like the film. I really am, because you're going to see this world, and you're going to know this world, so you're going to know people in this world. You're going to like it. I want, again, my wife. I want my producer. The reason my producer's on this film, which I didn't really talk about a lot before, was I wanted her to produce this because she knows nothing about this industry. And I thought if she could help me tell a story that people want to watch, then I've succeeded. And the very talented Sarah Kinney, who's my director of photography, who's doing all the camera work, she knows nothing about this industry. And so that's what it is. It's about telling a story. I want you to be entertained. And if you're not entertained, if you find yourself bored during my film, I have failed completely.
And the problem with me is I only think in memes. So two things came to mind when you were talking there. First of all, the price is wrong, bitch.
The price is wrong, bitch. Isn't even the best line in Happy Gilmore.
I don't know.
The best line in Happy Gilmore is, I could get you a warm glass of shut the hell up.
or you know, I eat pieces of shit bigger than you for breakfast. You eat shit for breakfast?
You eat pieces of shit for breakfast? No, shut up. Yeah, these are my favorite lines, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. The other one is just a very studly Russell Crowe, you know, opening up wide, are you not entertained? You know, just...
Are you not entertained? Yeah, that's what I teach film school for the past 7 years, and that's literally what I say when I'm teaching that.
Yeah.
I'm like, stop trying to make fucking art here. Like, that's where you will make art if you tell a story. Tell a goddamn story. Tell a story. Don't just make pretty pictures about pretty things. And that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Tell a story. The story is art. Don't worry about making art. Tell a story. That's actually a really cool way to look at it. My dad is actually a career artist, and I think he would definitely like that line. In fact, I'm going to share that with him once we're finished here. And
awesome.
I want to move on to sort of the nonsensical portion here. So
I love nonsense.
Do you, first of all, play fantasy sports? What is your biggest win? And are you now inspired to become a multi, you know, millionaire grinder? Are you trying to get in the action now after making this?
I do play fantasy sports. I couldn't tell you my biggest win. I'll tell you because I've never taken down a GPP.
Okay.
I am not very good. I will say this: I've become so much better since I've started this, because I've been studying the people. I do play Thad Houston in a head-to-head every week, a $20 head-to-head, just to see, and I think we're 4-4 right now.
Oh, wow!
I actually posted a screenshot of last week, because, well, this past weekend, I think Peter Jennings said he had a score of like 270 or something. Like, I beat Fad like 140 something to 114, which means we both had terrible teams. I just had a little better of a terrible team. So I also, when I first started doing this documentary, I remember talking to Drew Dingsmeyer, who's just the nicest guy in the world, and I couldn't say anything better about him. And it was baseball season, and, you know, he decided, you know, not to be in the film for reasons, again, just greatest guy. So please, no, in no way am I saying anything bad, but
right,
said, hey, man, I'm going to challenge you, and it was on Draft Street at the time, on a $55 head-to-head in baseball for one night, and I beat him, and he was like, hey, congrats, man, that was an awesome team, you did really well. And I'm like, by the way, I'm never playing you again, because I know damn well that I'm going to lose. And, you know, if I play you 10 times, I'll win 1 out of 10 times, and that was the one time. So I'm going to leave that with a 1-0 career record.
Yeah, you have the best winning percentage probably of all time of anybody against Dinkmeyer.
Exactly, that's why I feel... I mean, that's why I could brag about that. I won, you know, the $55, so I won $45 off them.
Yeah.
And I'm retiring.
100% win percentage against one of the best in the game. That's phenomenal. I don't think many people could pull that off.
Then that's why you should all go to Kickstarter.com or livingthefantasy.com and go on our Kickstarter page and know that you're not only giving a pledge to a great film, but of the greatest DFS player making a great film.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And something else I got to call you out on here. I got to call shenanigans. I don't like to do this because, you know, you're the best and everything, but I got to call shenanigans. Not everybody can be the nicest person in the world. You got to make rankings. We're fantasy players. We love rankings. I'm not saying you have to do it now. I'm just telling you that eventually you're going to need to come up with your nicest people in the world rankings, and you're going to have to put those out there for us so we can kind of differentiate.
I'll put number one is my best friend Jason Lott, who's not in the film and has nothing to do with this film, but he lives in L.A., and
okay.
I've always said he's the nicest guy you'll ever meet, so there you go.
Okay, cool. So that is the unquestioned top pick in nicest guy in the world drafts.
There you go. But I know you want me to pick the nicest people from my documentary. I mean, again, they're all... Well, first, again, I think they're all nice in their own way. But I'll easily take Tommy G out of that equation.
Yep, I think that's pretty easy.
He's not going to make the finals. Corey Albertson's a ridiculously nice guy. Not going to make the finals.
Hmm.
I was about to say Jeff Manns isn't going to make the finals, but actually Jeff's persona on the radio is 1,000% different than who he is. Like,
right.
He's the nicest guy. So, you know, they're all tied for first. Move on.
Okay, fine. Tied for first. Let it be known that I contest this ruling. I contest it, but I'll live with it because we do have
to. Well, I'll say this. When my assistant was transcribing all the footage, he was transcribing Matt Carpenter's interview, who's our underdog. And I remember him, like, knocking on the door of my office saying, and I, like, took off my headphones and said, what? He said, I want him to win. I said, oh, you're looking at Matt Carpenter, aren't you? He's like, I am. I love him. He's the greatest, sweetest guy. I'm like, I know, man. And he was the first person I filmed, so I'm like, I want Matt. Like, Matt's awesome, but now... Then I met Jeff, then I met Thad, then I met Kimra, you know. So
yeah.
Each of them go, but you're gonna meet Matt Carpenter in our film, be like, who is this kid, and how could I be his best friend?
All right, well, you know what? I'm looking for a new best friend, actually. So when I watch this, you might want to give him a heads up that Crazy Gaby might be contacting him.
I love it. He'll love it.
So I see you are a Braves fan. You hail from the Georgia area.
I do.
You're a Braves fan, obviously sort of a disappointing season there, although, you know, maybe a few things to be excited about in the future. But
nothing.
Oh, you know what there are?
Anderson, no, that's not true. We got Freddie Freeman and Anderson Simmons.
Yeah.
We got some really good young pitching if they wind up not having 17 Tommy John surgeries. So,
I think there's some things to be excited about, but I'll tell you what I'm excited about. And before I do, I want to ask, are you a comprehensive Atlanta fan of all the teams in the area?
No, I'm not.
No! Oh, man, I wanted to talk to you about the Atlanta Hawks. Because they are...
No, I know nothing about basketball. Man. I'm actually playing Rad Thad in a head-to-head tonight. I'm not kidding. I just challenged him to a $10 head-to-head so I could learn. Because I learned from Rad Thad that the best way to learn is by watching people who are great at it, spending maybe a tiny bit of money or doing it free, just watching people. So, like, Rad Thad's one of the best. So I'm basically giving him $10. In the same way you all should give $10 to our film, but I'm giving him $10 to learn how to play.
Well, I'm a master. If nothing else, I'm a master at the art of shameless self-promotion. So I will say, daily fantasy basketball, kind of my thing out of all of the different sports. So if you ever need any advice, feel free to drop me a line.
No, I will. I'm going to take you up on that. I'm actually going to email you my... After we talk, I'm going to email you my picks for tonight because I literally don't know who most of these people are. You're about to say, "Oh, I want to talk about the Atlanta Hawks." I'm like, "Great, let's talk about Dominique Wilkins and Spud Webb," because that's who I followed when I was in middle school.
Yeah, see, I'm driving the Atlanta Hawks bandwagon this season. I've made a few very controversial hot take statements on Twitter about them. And as my first NBA show starts tonight, I'm going to be making more of those. So I was hoping I could get into a little bit of, a Atlanta Hawks love fest with you. But that's okay. That's okay.
No, I mean, I could tell you about the entire history of the Atlanta Braves, but I know nothing about the Hawks. I know very little about the Falcons.
All right. Well, last question here, because I know you're a busy man. I know you probably have to get going places, working on the movie some more.
You
mentioned at the beginning that... one of the reasons you decided to take this venture on was you didn't see a whole lot of great poker movies or fantasy sports movies out there, and you kind of wanted to make one that, again, would be engaging, tell a story from the human interest side. Now, obviously, that's all fiction, or I'm sorry, nonfiction, of course, the documentaries. As far as fiction is concerned, we do have Rounders, so there is a really good poker movie in that regard. You're a filmmaker.
There's a better one.
Oh, what is that?
Go ahead. What was your question?
What were you going to say? I just want to know what the better one was because I want to contest.
So there's a better one that none of you ever watch because you think it's a stupid romantic comedy, but it's actually a brilliant, brilliant poker movie, and it's called Lucky You. It's with Eric Bana, Robert Duvall, and Drew Barrymore. It's directed by Curtis Hanson, who directed L.A. Confidential and 8 Mile. He's probably the best director working. He's directed Wonder Boys, and has written, I think Eric Roth wrote it, Anyway, you go see this movie just from the opening scene. It's Eric Bana in a pawn shop trying to pawn a digital camera for $300 because he's down to no money. And he uses his poker skills to get the $300 from this woman at a pawn shop. And then you see him take that $300 and move it up to $10,000 because he wants to play in the World Series of Poker. And then his father is played by Robert Duvall, who is sort of like based off of like Doyle Brunson. And it's just this like fucked up relationship between father and son. And it is the best poker I've ever seen in a movie. The problem is half of the movie is a romantic story between him and Drew Barrymore. That's a just a terrible movie. Fast forward through the Drew Barrymore scenes and just watch the poker stuff because it's fucking great.
We'll do, and that is now on my list of things to do. Grinders, that should be on your list as well. Lucky You, correct?
Yeah, wait, what did you say should be on my list?
No, I was saying to all the grinders listening right now.
There's a documentary called Grinder, so I thought
So what I wanted to ask you about was, would you ever consider making a Rounders type, or a Lucky You, I guess, type movie about fantasy sports?
No, I want to make a movie, I don't want to give too much away, but about fathers who play fantasy sports based on their kids' Little League game.
That would be a phenomenal, it'd be like the Bad News Bears, only with the fantasy sports.
Yeah, except for fathers who, it's about fathers that, I'm giving too much away. I'm going to go trademark this right away. But anyway,
Definitely make sure.
I would. I mean, I am a narrative filmmaker before I'm a documentary filmmaker, so there's something. I mean, I do love fantasy sports, so there is something I want to do.
Awesome. Well, time is up. I know you got to get going. We did go a little long, but you know what? This is such a kick-ass interview. I don't care, and I know nobody else will. Josh Adler, he is the director of Living the Fantasy. You can find his project at livingthefantasy.com. Also, make sure you check out the Kickstarter campaign and at least give that $10 level. You can follow their efforts at the_fantasy_doc, that's D-O-C, on Twitter. And Josh, thank you so much.
And honestly, if anybody has any questions for me, go on Twitter, hit me up on Twitter, email me, whatever. You'll see my email on our website, Living the Fantasy. I'd love to. I'm very good at responding and interacting with anybody. If you want to talk about anything.
And make sure you also remember that Doc is short for doctor, so if you have any lineup questions, drop by and make sure you ask me.
Damn it, because what I was telling you before is that people who didn't know have like gone on and said, hey, Fantasy Doc, hit me up. Who should I start tonight, Kirk Cousins or Eli Manning? And I'm just like, I am not a fantasy expert, but I got Eli Manning tonight. And that week, by the way, that happened, I was dead right.
Dang. Well, maybe that's a sign of things to come. We should be asking you questions.
It's a sign of the apocalypse if I'm right about fantasy sports. I'm a filmmaker.
Josh Adler, everyone, thank you again so much for joining us, and hope we can have you back on the show here once the documentary is actually ready for release. We can talk a little more about it.
Absolutely, anytime. It's been a pleasure, man. Thank you.
Take care, buddy.
Take care. Bye.